if you're ready to stand on the line, if you're ready to fight back and serve it to the criminals trying to enslave you and steal your wealth through monetary creation and exorbitant taxation, you're in the right place. Welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com. While you're at PrepperRecon.com, stop by the Prepper Recon Supply Store. We've got a great selection of Molly compression packs, hydration kits, and our new concealed carry tactical slings. All the packs and slings come with your choice of patch to let liberals know how you feel. We have some very cool Moulin Lay patches, Come and Take It patches, Sheepdog, Zombie Response Team, and matching U.S. flag patches. Of course, we still have our fully stocked Molly-compatible individual first aid kits as well. Just click the store tab at the top of the PrepperRecon.com homepage. Today's guest is Mike Leister of Tactical Wood Gas. Mike, welcome back on the show.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it was real fun talking to you about the gas fires. And now that we've had a season of talking to customers at the prepper shows and one-on-one locally, we've kind of expanded out to battery banks, and so I figured maybe we could talk about that a little bit, anywhere else you want to go.
Absolutely. But now first, for our new listeners, can you just briefly describe what Tactical Wood Gas does and how you got started with all of that?
Okay. So it started, I guess, I was born with the prepper gene in my DNA. And it always seemed like the right thing to do, going all the way back to the 70s and joining scouts and learning skills, that would be useful, when the modern conveniences are not available. And so I'd done the normal, food preps and rotation and gardening and along with my brother-in-law, at his farm, harvesting hogs and cattle and such. And, the self-defense stuff, and I'm a avid ham radio guy. Doing my analysis, it just energy was the whole. And I didn't have any idea of starting up a company. I just was looking for solutions to my own problems. And one of the problems was that both of us, my brother-in-law and I, both commuted, and worked remotely a lot. We'd do these, basically butchering once a year, and we'd have a year's worth of meat. And if the power went out when we were out of town and couldn't get back for a while, that's thousands of dollars worth of meat down the drain. So we thought, how do we solve this energy problem? And what led us to wood gas, which is, our name, Tactical Wood Gas, was the logical path of, get a normal Home Depot generator. It wasn't long before we figured out that, my brother-in-law and I are comfortable with small gas engines and troubleshooting and things like that, but not a lot of other people within our, family were. So we said, well, what are our next best option would be a battery bank. So we built some personal battery banks, and, we did four of the GC2 golf cart batteries. And that's about 6 kilowatt hours. And if you're going to have maximum life out of your lead acid batteries, you don't want to discharge them down below half. And since the inverters that we stuck on those things have low voltage alarms and basically stop before they get that low, that wasn't a problem. So at that point, we had a solution where our wives, we were out of town. Our wives said, hey, there's a power outage. They go downstairs, plug the chest freezer into the battery bank inverter, flip a little, lightweight switch, and they're done for, a couple of weeks, which gave us time to get back. And then we thought, well, what if, there's longer term disasters than that. How do we handle that? So we looked at our own generators and said, wow, life expectancy on these things and people, I think everyone who owns a generator is going to run and pull their book out and take a look at it. They rate those things for like 80 to 100 hours. And that's basically you're get what you pay for. And what they've targeted American generators for is a very, very reliable power grid that goes out for, you know, short duration. And so people over 4 or 5 years may wear out a generator just because they don't need it that often. But we're thinking, you know, long-term disasters. So we came up with a little three-horse that spins an alternator that puts out 13.8 volts and directly charges with DC voltage our battery bank. And we're real happy with that because it just sips the gas. You don't have to store that much to get a lot of energy. And then we, you know, of course, there's always that next logical step. And the next logical step was, hey, what happens if we need that gasoline to run our vehicles or we just run out of it? And that led us into researching wood gas. And that's a method of extracting hydrogen, methane, and a couple other gases from just wood. Or, you know, we did a test burn with dried cherry pits. Here in eastern Washington, there's a lot of fruit trees. So dried cherry pits, you can get $4 for 40 pounds. And we've done test runs, and they run just fine. So it's a way of burning them such that you have surplus gases that you can run carbureted gas engines with. And as we talk to people, we have been selling these things, but too many people said, well, let me get a battery bank first, and we were just floored that so many people don't have battery banks. And that kind of led us to the next product, which we have now. And, you know, I'm an engineer. I've got power conversion systems up on the space station. I've got, the Williams Grand Prix race car in the 90s, part of my power handling system. So I've got a lot of years of electronics behind me and a lot of hands on. And I assumed that everyone was like me, and they're not. So it turns out that the best thing that we could do for folks is put together very little knowledge required battery bank to get them started. And what it is you use a deep cycle marine or RV battery that you buy locally. And we thought, well, it'd be better if nobody had to do anything, they could just buy it. But these things are 70 pounds. They're not the little tiny batteries that come in the things you find on Amazon that they'll claim to charge your car. If it's got 100 amp hours of power, which is what, 1200 watt hours of power, and it doesn't weigh 80 pounds, they're lying to you. What we said is everyone has a local Walmart or Bi-Mart or, you know, they basically have got local access to a RV deep cycle marine type battery with 100 amp hours or more for under $100. And that's, you know, it would cost to ship those crazy things. So what you do is you take our unit and your deep cycle marine battery, RV battery.
And then you give folks the specs on how big it should be, and you kind of give them a guide to what they need to be shopping for when they go get their own battery. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. We actually have a video. We've got a series of three videos. And the first video is, hey, you know, you want to buy this thing, or you have just bought it and you received it. You need to get your battery. Here's what to look for. And it's a size 27 or a size 29, 12 volt DC. And it's 100 amp hours or more. You'll see cranking hours and cold cranking hours and peak amps, and all of that stuff is meaningless. That is for people who are starting engines. What you're doing with the batteries in this usage is you're storing energy for long-term use. And the only thing that matters is amp hours. So you want 100 amp hours or more, 12 volts. There's like 27 DC and 29 DC are the model numbers that for the ones that Walmart carries. I think they're like $85, $87 for an enormous amount of energy. And so what you do is you just stick this thing in the box. It's got regular battery cables. You need a little wrench to tighten it down, and you're done. So what is it besides the box? It's got all the wiring neatly tied together, so you can see, hey, this is the plus, this is the minus. There's the battery plus, there's the battery minus. It's easy to make sure you don't get them backwards. You tighten that thing down and you plug the thing into the wall. So there's that part that plugs in the wall is a microprocessor controlled 2-amp battery maintainer. And it'll put 2 amps in, which is what, 24 watts. So, if you'd used 50 amp hours of energy out of the thing, or which would be what, 600-700 watt hours, you'd probably need to run that thing 16 to 24 hours to for it to top off. It's got some safety things in there. If you've really run the thing down, it may time out after 8 or 10 hours and say, what's going on here? Please take a look at me. And all you got to do is unplug and replug it. But for what we designed the thing for, since it's a single battery, you just lug the thing out to your car and you, hook your jumper cables up to it. And we've got a video on that as well. And you run your car for half hour, 45 minutes with the jumper cables down to the thing and then bring it back up. Into your house. And I've got a niece, for example, in more in town in Spokane area there. And we've had enough power outages that they've had to deal with that even with our smaller unit, the 35 amp hour one, which is the tactical version, they ran a TV, a DVD player, watched some movies during the power outage, and ran their refrigerator. And when they were done with all that, they ran it down to the car, charged it back up, and that smaller one would charge in like half an hour. And they'd bring it back up, and then they'd run their refrigerator for like 5 or 6 hours on the thing to keep things nice and cool, and by then the power came back on. So it solves a lot of problems. It if you've got plenty of food put away or a full freezer, it can do a lot to solve problems for you. Now the other part of so that's the kind of the keep charging up the battery with a trickle charger so that when the power goes out, your battery is just topped off. And you can leave that thing plugged in all the time. It's, like I said, it's a microprocessor controlled. So it's not going to boil off your, or it's not going to overcharge. It's not going to overcharge your battery. It'll back off and keep it as healthy as can be. And the next part of the thing, and these are connected on the top of the unit, is a 800 watt inverter. And an inverter takes the 12 volts from your DC battery and turns it into 120 volts like you get out of your wall outlet. And that's what we run, of course, the refrigerators and freezers and such on it. We went with the 800 watts and we went through actually a fair amount of inverters to find the ones that can handle surges. And, that's important for, especially with some of your older refrigerators. A little electronics here, I guess. Your freezer or refrigerator has a compressor, and it's got an electric motor that runs. And when you first apply power to an electric motor, it's almost a dead short. And so there's a whole bunch of current for a very short amount of time in order to get that engine spinning. And everyone who sells an 800 watt inverter, says, hey, it'll handle a surge to 1600 watts. Well, for how long is the question? And so we went through basically all the decent inverters and found the one that handles the longest surge so that even some of these old beastie refrigerators, you can get that compressor spinning and running. So the an additional feature of that is it's got a little USB port, so you can charge your mobile devices off that as well. So that's kind of the kit version. Questions on that?
It sounds great. Last time you were on the show, we talked a lot about weather events and things, and pretty much everybody, no matter where you live in America, you're at risk to losing power. Last year, tons of people lost power because the ice up that was building up on the tree limbs above power lines were snapping the limbs, taking the power lines out below them, and folks were out of power for weeks. And if you live anywhere along the coast like I do in Florida, you're susceptible to hurricanes. We lose power all the time. Everywhere else there's tornadoes. So no matter where you're at risk of losing power. But the winter's a particularly bad time to lose power, isn't it?
Yeah. One of the things that is so nice about this for folks who have propane heat, central forced air heating, or they've got natural gas, is that it doesn't take a lot of electricity to run your furnace, because all the heat is coming from the gas or the propane. You just need something to turn on the little controller, the piezo ignite, you know, get the thing lit, and then the thing can just run just by you know, the fan. And so you know, we've out at the farm in Spokane where my brother-in-law lives, we've got the furnace set up so we can, you know, normally you'd hardwire a furnace, but we've put a plug on the thing so you can plug it in. So they can unplug it and stick it on the battery bank and have nice heat that way. So yeah, it solves that problem. There's a lot of people, you know, they are so accustomed to reliable power that they don't think of all the things that don't work when the power is out, and you're kind of stuck. And what do you do? You know, so the peace of mind of even having a single battery, you know, and you've got a recharging method right out front in your car or your truck. To charge a thing, you know, as often as you need to. So, you know, it was the 70s. A few years, I was a military brat. So my dad was in the Air Force and I moved around the world a lot. And we moved to England not too long after they had those energy rolling blackouts in England. And they had a massive amount of house fires and they were actually, people could not stand the dark, to the point that they were getting, these tallow candles, not the paraffin ones. And they would, dip them over and they'd burn their house down. And knowing that risk, they would take that risk just because of how important it is to have light, to do things. It, you know, we're so used to that. And this solves that problem as far, you know, the amount of, energy that is in a deep cycle battery is quite a bit. So yeah, peace of mind. And then, you know, for someone who's on insulin, in fact, I was talking to a guy who's he's taking care of his mom who's on a let's see, when your kidneys fail, dialysis. He's on a dialysis machine. You know, a battery bank like that would let her get two full cycles of blood cleaning per day between charging, recharging. So it's something that, you know, can go beyond convenience and go into life-saving as well. And even if, you know, even if you don't have someone, you know, in your immediate family, I bet you've got a neighbor who you know, has some sort of an issue like that where you could save lives and build a pretty strong community by helping people out when they need it.
It's time for a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold. Check out silver.com today.
Now, when Janet Napolitano, when she stepped down from DHS in her exit speech, she said it was a matter of when, not if, that U.S. infrastructure would be attacked. Given the current political climate with Russia and, of course, North Korea, do you think attacks against the grid are more likely now than ever before?
I think they are. And, you know, an example of this Sony hack. I mean, Sony's got many millions of dollars to they may have billions of dollars to protect, and they've got really, really smart people defending them. And look what happened. The hackers got in. There's, you know, theories that's a, you know, state sponsored and, you know, could it have come from Korea? Could it come from somewhere else? And Korea's getting the blame. You know, guys like you and I may never know the answer to that. But what we can learn from it is that, you know, very well defended, valuable resources can be brought down by people who are willing to put, you know, the right resources and money at it. And I think that there's a lot of people in the world that don't like what we stand for, you know, don't like our foreign policy and would, you know, jump at the chance to do this. So I think it is just a matter of time. And that's, you know, a big part of why I got into the, you know, emergency, and backup energy business is to try to help people get ready for that, because the more people have even just a single battery backup, our kit there, have a lot of options. They can keep the radio going, they can keep the dialysis going, they can do a lot of things, and not be dependent upon a grid that comes up and goes down.
And I think the latest speculation now is that it may have been some disgruntled employees at Sony. But regardless of who caused the Sony attack, we've already taken retaliatory measures against North Korea by shutting down their internet. So either way, the hornet's nest is stirred up now. Now, like you said, your background is in engineering. Can you give us an estimate of how long it would take to get the grid back up and running if it were to sustain a cyber attack?
Wow. I know that I'm more electronic engineering rather than electrical, which is, power grid. But through the reading that I've done and actually experience, I was actually down in San Diego during the power outage. They had basically doing normal maintenance, to spec. The operator did not make a mistake, took down Southern California, most of Arizona, and part of New Mexico for about 12 hours. So 12 hours from one person doing things, as they should. And they did some damage, basically, to the San Onofre nuclear power plant down there as part of this, with the loading that they had to do. They barely got that thing up to keep the Anaheim area going. Depends on what kind of a thing. If it's a cyber attack, it may take weeks for us to put it back together. If it's an EMP, coronal mass ejection, it may take a year. Some of the big transformers that are, tie together the five or six major parts of the national grid, those things have a 2-year lead time. And my understanding is that we don't have any backups in the stock, which is kind of nuts. But I think there's the guy who wrote The One Second After and some other people are, ringing the bell on trying to get Congress to respond to, as far as getting some of these things stockpiled just from a national security standpoint. But I think, things like Katrina, you could have a localized power outage that lasted for months. And that means that, if you're in freezing weather like we have here, folks are going to be dying from cold. If you're in the South in August, people can have heat strokes. So a lot of problems get solved with the power, and you need to be ready for actually an extensive power outage. And then the shorter ones are easier for you.
And people don't think about an economic collapse being something that would be likely to trigger a power outage, but we've had Furfall on this show a couple of times, and he survived the 2001 economic collapse in Argentina, and they had prolonged periods of brownouts and blackouts and low power to where, it was just this constant, nagging problem. And so a battery backup would pretty much solve about 99% of what he went through, I would say. What'd you think?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things I keep by is just a normal battery charger like you would, use automotive stuff for recharging your car battery. And that absolutely solves the issue of intermittent power. So when you have power, you can use it. And you can use that power that you have, even if it's a rolling blackout where you get 4 hours of power a day. You can fully charge that battery or if you have two or three, you can fully recharge those batteries and then use them during the time the grid is out. An additional problem that we don't have here yet, is maintenance issues. Right now, the frequency of our power is dead on, and the voltage is very well controlled. During a longer economic collapse, my expectation is that people's ability to pay is going to limit how much the power companies are going to extract as far as fees. And they're going to have to keep the grid up. Otherwise, they stop getting paid even the smaller amounts that people can afford. And they're going to fill that gap by cutting maintenance or buying lower grade quality parts. And we're going to end up with something, if we go down that path, that resembles a third world power grid. And in that case, sensitive electronics, you don't want connected to that. In that case, you could use your battery bank to, store the energy and then put it out at, exactly 60 hertz, at exactly 110, 120 volts, just exactly what you need. And then recharge it with the kind of the sloppy power that you're getting from a poorly maintained grid.
And then you mentioned that the battery backup could be charged with your car battery. Could that be directly connected to the car battery and just bypass charging from one battery to the other? Could you just take your inverter and hook that up to the car battery if you ran out of power on your battery backup due to a long outage?
Right. So you treat it just like you treat it like it's a car with a dead battery, the same technique. So what you do is you take your car and you start it up and let it warm up for 5 minutes or so. Then you set the battery bank, the battery pack right next to it within, jumper cable reach of the battery that's in there. And you clamp the positive onto you clamp one of the red leads onto the positive terminal of your car battery, and then you go down and you clamp the other end of the positive onto the positive lead of your battery bank. Then you connect the negative jumper cable wire onto the negative of the battery pack, and then you go either to the frame or to the negative post of the battery that's in your car. And, either way works fine. But from a safety standpoint, in case someone has, reversed some leads or shorted something out, they've always recommended that you go to the frame. And that's, when you connect it, you should see a few little sparks. If you don't, you're not on the frame. And if you're unsure, just connect to the negative post. And that way, initially, some of the energy from your car battery is going out to the to your battery bank. But mostly, what you're relying on is your alternator, which is running. On most cars, it'll put out about 70 to 100 amps. That will, if you've got 100 amps and you've got a 100 amp hour battery, that's exactly 1 hour to charge it. Although you're typically not you're not using all 100 amp hours. You want to run it down to no more than 50 amp hours. And so it'd take you about a half hour. And that thing is fully charged again and ready to go. So that, you treat it, it's the same process for jumping and recharging this battery bank as you would use on a dead car battery in another car.
Very good. So it's a great recommendation to keep your gas tank full all the time, especially if you have any expectations of bad weather.
Yeah, and one thing we like about recommending this way of doing it versus having a separate and we do advocate generators. It's not that we're poo-pooing generators, but for someone who's getting started who has very little energy preps and they want to get started. They don't know maybe necessarily a lot about small gas engines. They'll buy a generator and they'll stick it on a shelf and they've never actually added the oil or they don't even know that it needs oil. And they haven't stored any gasoline, but everyone maintains their car because they always use it. And so it's got, it's hopefully had the oil changed. It's got, I like to keep mine, at least half full. And then I've got some treated gas and diesel that I keep as backup should I, you know, space out on that. But, you know, basically your car is your generator to recharge it in this mode.
Sounds like great stuff. Mike, just tell us real quickly where folks can connect with you and where they can go to look at all the products that you offer.
Okay. Yeah, we're at www.tacticalwoodgas.com. We've got sales@tacticalwoodgas.com. That'll get you to Kelly, my brother-in-law, who's a FAA certified high-end fabricator. So he's in charge of how we build things and the quality of them. And then if you want to talk to me directly, that's mike@tacticalwoodgas.com. And then we've got a 800 number that's on the site. And I guess there's one other option I omitted while we were talking. So we've got two versions. We've got the kit version where you buy your own deep cycle RV battery and you stick it in there. But we've also got the tactical version. And we got that one for, you know, like for the ham radio field day crowd, for people who, you know, take protecting family and community seriously and want to have, you know, a grab-and-go option that's basically very ruggedized. And in that case, we're using a smaller battery. We actually, in this case, because it's smaller and lighter, we actually do supply it wired and ready to go, and it includes the battery. So it's about a 40-pound unit. It's got 35 amp hours in it. It's got the, you know, the same inverter. And this is the one that I mentioned my niece, has and has used to run, you know, their big screen TV and their DVD player during the power outages, have used it to run their refrigerator. So, those are the two options that we've got on the website there. Through the end of the month, which is, well, that's tomorrow, we're giving out, 400 lumen flashlights with them. And we'll figure out, what we can do for January, after, kind of get everyone back from the holidays. So that's about it for contact information.
Great. And then anytime you're going to be at a show, do you post that on the website? So if somebody wants to just come and pick a unit up from a show, maybe they can save a little on shipping?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the gas fires are kind of big, and they go out freight and crates. So anytime you can get it from us, either by coming by to pick it up or being, you know, us, you know, coming to you, your area for a show, that's absolutely the way to go. Yeah, we've got a, you know, a shows part. We've wiped out everything that we did in, you know, for 2014, and we're working on our schedule for 2015, but that'll be up there on the website as well.
Mike, thanks again for taking time to come on the show.
All right. Hey, and thanks for putting out those, audio, on your collapse, series. I really enjoyed those. And, my next step is to pick up Noah.
Awesome. I'll get you a copy of that.
All right. Take care.
Are we living in a time of which there is more prophetic writings than of any period in history? Watch through the eyes of Noah Parker and his family as a global empire takes shape. Ancient writings are fulfilled, and the last days fall upon the once great United States of America. The Days of Noah, Book 1, Conspiracy, by Mark Goodwin, is a fast-paced fiction thriller which looks at how conspiracies could play into biblical prophecy concerning end times. Buy The Days of Noah in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition at Amazon.com.